Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to the special Hugh Weber edition of the In the Know podcast. Jason and I are going to be interviewing Hugh Weber, who is the president of the New Orleans Hornets. And I'm pretty excited. How about you, Jason?
Yep.
Short and sweet. So let's go ahead and get Hugh on the line, and we'll start hitting questions. We'll be talking about all kinds of things, including season ticket sales, the Chris Paul trade, and what did happen there. What kind of, you know, TV deal we can expect in the future, and several other topics. So stick around and listen. So we're now joined by President Hugh Weber of the Hornets to answer a few questions that we had for him. Thanks a lot for joining us, Hugh.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So we had a series of about six topics we wanted to rattle through. Most of them have to do with, in general, the stability of the team. I mean, that's what most of our readers are interested in, knowing, you know, the team's staying put, what kind of ticket sales there are. The attendance question's always been coming up for years. Getting an idea of, you know, what kind of efforts a team is making to put a great product on the floor, what kind of ways they can be engaged and also take part in the team, and also just to get an idea of, like, what we should be looking forward to in, like, the next couple months for you know, maybe announcements from the team and things along those lines. And, of course, the very first question we had is you know, there was a lot of information out about the I'm In campaign and how successful it was, and they hit the target of 10,000 season ticket sales and went past. Of course, with the team not doing particularly well on the floor at the moment, attendance is down a bit, even though the season ticket sales are up.
Right.
So we just had some questions. So what is the team doing to try to, because I guess it's time to do renewals already. So is the I'm In campaign going to continue in its current form, or are you guys trying to do something else?
Yeah, I think that your question's a great one, and it's one that, you know, when I talk to fans at games, and fans call my office and email me and tweet back to me and do lots of things. So I've had a lot of these questions in the past, and they're all very interesting, and they're somewhat related. So in order to kind of give some perspective in terms of what the team is doing, you have to go back really 14 months to December of 2011. I'm sorry, 2010, when the team was purchased by the NBA. And I think at that point, everyone had a lot of questions and concerns, and you know, overriding any of the questions were really the fundamental one, which is the team going to be here? Is this my team? Is it, what's the legacy here? What can I count on this team being here for me? And it's been at that time we came out with a commitment from starting with the commissioner that said we were going to do everything we could to find a local owner committed to keeping this team here for generations to come. And that really started with this understanding of what the obstacle was. Our fans at the time said, you know what, we're in. We believe that the Hornets are important to the community. We believe that they've been good stewards of, as a professional team and representing the city. But we just need to know you're in. And that was literally came out of the words that came out of some fans' mouth. And we said, that's it. You know, this is it. We are in. We are in for the city. And the way it was presented was intended to really share the ethic that if you're in for the city, you're in for the Hornets. And if you're in for the Hornets, you're in for the city. And we gathered a bunch of different celebrities and went on our way doing that. I think what we found in that moment of time, that moment of history, is it resonated. I-Man became something bigger than just selling tickets or transacting, you know, what it might mean to get season tickets or whatever. It became kind of a battle cry for maybe a greater New Orleans cause, and that is, you know, we're no longer rebuilding anymore. We're doing some special things here in the city. We all sense it. We feel the vibe of things that are happening here, and the Hornets want to be a part of that. So over the last 12 months and through the I'm in RU and 100 events in 100 days and going out and really busting our tails, we were able to engage fans in really a manner that was beyond basketball. It wasn't about who was playing on our team or who wasn't. It wasn't about who was starting at our two guard or wasn't. It was about what the team meant to the community. And so those folks that bought those 10,000 season tickets through that period, which was really unprecedented. There wasn't anybody in the entire country that was selling season tickets during that time. And I think it's indicative because everyone else was selling basketball, which they couldn't talk about. And we weren't. We were talking about what this team meant and what it could mean in terms of getting local ownership and being here for a long time. And so it's interesting now, those fans that have bought those season tickets the first time, you know, we all love to see a winner. We all love to see, you know, it's always more fun to come to the arena and have a team that has a chance to win every single night. But what I have heard from our fans this year is that they are very impressed with the job that Monty has done, even with the injuries and the players that we have, to have our guys going out in a dedicated way, working hard, you know, even though they may not be at the same talent level as the opponent that night, they certainly are working their butts off to play at that level. I think people appreciate that. And the other thing that people really love about our games is that they're fun, they're entertaining. And so win or lose, the fans that we've been able to bring on board, the 10,000 season tickets, has been one at which people have been relatively patient, understanding the process that we're going through, understanding the big picture of what we're trying to get to. But that is only good for so long. And so as we enter this renewal process, we are very sensitive to the fact that this is about showing signs of improvement and showing a pathway. So being able to have some local ownership in place before we even head out with renewals, or at least in close proximity to doing so, will be fundamental. It's the number one thing we hear from our season ticket holders, that they're willing to be patient on our performance, as long as they know we have a local owner who's dedicated to winning long term. And that's what we're working on.
Okay. Well, since you brought up the ownership, I'm going to jump ahead to a question that I had. So March 12th, we have the legislative session starting up in New Orleans, where things like the lease will be tossed around, and you know that lease has been a little bit of a thorn in the Hornets' side for PR purposes, because it draws attention to attendance every year. And that's something that, you know, you can easily point to and make a, write an article about is, you know, the Hornets, are they hitting their attendance or not? So March 12th, when that rolls around and the lease is on the table again, is there any chance that we might have an owner who's willing to start that negotiation process?
Well, yeah, we have been actually been working with the governor's staff and for close to 6 months or so on the new iteration of what a long-term commitment would be for the state and for the team. And the reason we had to do that start before you even had an owner is that an owner, before they purchased the team, had to understand what they were partnering with. The NBA made it very clear that any ownership that we would look at had to be committed to being here in the state. So in order for us to make that commitment, we had to be able to show what the lease might look like. And so it actually is probably more likely that you would find an ownership announcement and then either simultaneously or soon after the terms of a new lease, because, again, they go hand in hand in terms of bringing stability and a long-term legacy to the region. So those are all things that are that we've been working very hard on. The commissioners talked about a timeline of, you know, first quarter, second quarter of this calendar year, of which we're, you know, in the thick of right now. So, you know, we've been working on all fronts to make sure that that's part of the process that we'll be talking about. And hopefully, as I said, answering fans' questions as we go into the process of selling for next year, 2012-13.
So just got to ask the question. How do you have any sort of timetable you could give us?
Yeah, well, you know, it's mid to late February now, and for some time we've talked about this exact time period moving maybe into you know, March and even into June, depending on, these are complicated deals to put together,
right?
But there's no reason that it can't be done and at the timeline we're talking about. You know, and hopeful that that is part of what we go out and talk about with our season ticket holders going next year. Now, we normally do renewals in mid February or March.
Yep.
And you know, that's the timeline, you know, we've kind of operated on, and maybe slowing things down a little bit from a renewal process just because you know, we would love to get Eric back on the court. We would love to have people see the player that he is. We would love to have them get a taste of the talent that he is and see that with him on this team, you know, we don't necessarily have, you know, we're not completely there yet, but we certainly have a pathway to the building blocks that we're talking about. And I think that'll be important for fans to see as they make a commitment for next year.
Right.
Well, seeing Eric. So one way to see the team is to show up, and the in-game experience, I know from my seats, it's great. But TV is how I think a lot of people in the region see it. And our TV deal is coming up for negotiation the first time since the team has come here in 2002. The team went with CST instead of Fox Sports at that time. Right now, Fox Sports has lost the Rockets going into next year. So I'm assuming CST and Cox are at the table again. So are there other companies in the mix? Are we looking at that right now? Is it the backseat to the ownership? And how many of these people are looking at 82 games and being on Cox, Charter, Dish, and DirecTV like Fox Sports already is?
Okay. That's a great question. We have, unfortunately, there are no back seats right now. Everything is in the front seat. Everything is a priority. And our TV deal has just been one of the other things we've been working through in addition to the other things we've already talked about with ownership and with the state. So we've been working on what our next agreement might look like. And our current agreement with Cox provides that we now have distribution basically in all geographic areas from in most of Louisiana from the Texas border into Mississippi. The challenge is, though, within that geographic border, it's not in, on all distribution channels. To your point, it's not on DirecTV. So if you are in the city and you have DirecTV, you cannot watch our games. And if you are in on the North Shore, you can watch our games, but it's not. It might be on Charter or Dish Network. So there's a bit of a misnomer people have. It's not a geographic coverage issue. It's a distribution issue. And that has been one of the fundamental points we have had in our discussions with our future provider, whether it's our current provider or whomever, to make sure that that is the priority for this team, is that in order for us to grow our brand over the next 10 years or so, we're going to need to have fans be able to watch our games, whether it's for 65 or 82 or what have you, and to make sure that the quality of our broadcast, we do have all of our games on HD this year, but moving forward, that the quality of our broadcast, the production of our broadcast, and the distribution of our broadcast will probably play as predominant a role in the decision of who gets the business as opposed to just a monetary issue. So news at 11, it's we continue to work, you know, and we continue to come to finalization, but I'm not ready yet to tell you how many people are involved or not.
That's right.
Obviously, you know, having, I think one of the questions you asked earlier is that, you know, what's ahead for this team in the next 6 months? And we think that there are some seismic changes, some incredible announcements for this team. We have had the history over the last 6 years of really being in a position to try to thrive in circumstances that weren't optimal, maybe, you know, having to relocate to Oklahoma City for 2 years, having to come back in a manner that, you know, you're not, you know, the market was 60% of what it was at the time, and you're kind of building a base, and you're, you know, the remarketing of the team, if you remember, if you guys have followed the team since 2002, we've talked about this internally a lot, that when the team came here from Charlotte, it was really about, you know, an NBA team that now happened to be in New Orleans. And when we came back in 07 and 08, we definitely were taking on the ethic that this was a New Orleans institution, a New Orleans business that happened to be in the NBA. And I think you saw much of our demeanor and the way we market ourselves change because we didn't have a 45-year history in the marketplace. All of those things have kind of what, you know, and change in ownership and then the NBA ownership and all these things you can look at and say, you know, this team has been through a lot. And, you know, what I feel is that this team has been battle-tested both on and off the court. And as you get to these next 6 months, kind of the fruits of all that labor over the last 6 months are really what it is that we're all working toward, and that is a very, very high probability of not just a stable franchise, but a franchise that'll thrive with some incredible developments. And I think that's kind of a misnomer that people have about the team because of all this talk about attendance and our attendance thresholds, and you know, is that they're kind of we're kind of in this precarious position. But amongst NBA kind of circles and organizations, the Hornets are perceived to be, you know, one of the better run, better optimized organizations in the NBA, and we kind of take our pride on that. But we've got to get our brand more in line with how we operate, and not have national media and others look at us and say, oh, poor New Orleans Hornets, right? We're beyond that. This is a team that's doing some amazing things, and over the next 6 months, we're going to see a lot of those things come to fruition.
Okay. This is just something that I always wondered what this was like. You've been with the organization for quite some time. But 2 years ago, two off seasons ago, when Jeff Bauer left, it was even before the sales of the NBA had been announced, when they brought in Del Demps and Monty, there was a tremendous turnover at that point in basketball operations. And I mean, it was down to like the video review guy was turned over. I had just received like the media guide from our writer Niall at the time, like maybe 2 months before for the previous season that I was looking through, and I realized like 3 months later, it was almost useless to me.
Right.
So, I mean, I was just trying to get an idea of that is was seemed a lot more extreme than what you see in other. Businesses or other ownership changes that we've seen in the league, they usually do have turnover, and you know the GM usually you know can be moved, and the coach definitely you know coaches turnover in the NBA all the time. But what was the decision point that you guys decided that was necessary?
Well, that change that we made two summers ago was really. Had nothing to do with ownership change. It had more to do with where we felt we needed to position ourselves as an organization with the changing environment in the NBA and in order to build a sustainable, high-quality, high-performance organization. And as we made a change from the culture that we had at the time, and as you... you may compare us to other NBA teams, but organizations generally, when you do bring in new leadership and you recruit people, I hired Monty initially, and obviously you tell a coach, you know, you can pick your assistant coaches. You got to be able to build a staff and build a culture that you want. And, you know, 6 weeks later was looking at when we made a change with the general manager. So, that in itself was backwards to the way that most people would do it, but again, I think it was indicative of the fact that we were going to in a direction that would require us to make fundamental changes across the board. You can't just change the nameplates on a couple offices and expect the culture to change. And when I spoke to Dell about coming on board. We made the commitment at the time that the organization we had to build, that we needed to build in order to be competitive, in order to do the diligence that we needed to do in scouting, in order to do the diligence that we needed to do in player development, in order to be as competitive in recruiting free agents and making this a destination that guys would want to come play, we had to look at every last detail, and not just you know, who was sitting in a chair at the videographer's position, as you said, but how we did things and what the environment was like and how we conducted ourselves and what we did when we, you know, first spoke to guys. And every little last detail is part of the culture. And so Dell and Monty and I, it started with that, in that we were going to set up something that was a little bit different in our decision process, that it wasn't going to be this hierarchy of, you know, coach reports to GM, GM reports to president, and we'll make decisions, and president will make, you know, decision or a recommendation to owner, and we'll move on. We kind of used a triangle decision-making process where the three of us would have input. We would go back and forth, very collaborative, very trustworthy, and we were part of kind of rehauling that entire process. So that's why I believe at the time we had 23 people on basketball operations staff. I think that we came back, we had 28, and there were only three or four that were the same head. So that's part of what it takes to radically change the culture. And at the time, we felt we had this incredible opportunity in 07, 08, where the team really outperformed expectations. We were probably ahead of our timeline in terms of having young guys develop faster. And I think that the organization just wasn't ready for it. You know, we hadn't institutionalized the success, and therefore it was very fleeting. And you see that very often in sports where, you know, teams might outperform a year or two and then they're gone. And what we were trying to build is something that's much more predictable, much more planned, strategic, and much more sustainable. And that's what we're on right now.
Oh, I was going to say, so you talk about building the business up from the inside like this. One way that you do this, you have to have success to get the money, get the people in, but you also have to have business support. And David Stern has said this before as well. Right now, the Hornets have increased their sponsorship bottom line by billions of dollars per year. My guess is probably close to 10. But at the same time, I've been told that the Hornet season ticket space doesn't really use their tickets for business purposes, the business owners. Somehow they're not as sophisticated in that regard. You don't have business deals going down the games. So how are you engaging the businesses in that way to show them the value that is a season ticket or to show them the value of the sponsorship, including now with Aon and Vasquez, Bellinelli, international potential, especially with Pan American Life sitting there, a large right. insurance company with an enormous Latin American presence. I would add, too, that this was a problem about 30 years ago with the Jazz. It was the business support. So to me, this is crucial. So does IMIN extend to getting the businesses in, and what are the Hornets doing to, in return, support the business community?
Yeah, let me split your question into two parts. One is really how businesses engage with the Hornets. They engage both on the sponsorship side or the partnership side, and they also engage on the ticketing and hospitality side with suites and other things. I will tell you the perspective of your question, there's a lot of accuracy in the fact that there is a very unique aspect about New Orleans, and that is I have some theories as to why, but that most CEOs or business owners are themselves fans, and they use their business budgets to buy tickets so they can go to games, and that's wonderful. That's what makes this market so, you know, people tend to promote the sports here more than they do in other markets for that reason. Sports is very emblematic of what it means socially to be a part of this community. And I think the history behind that is that, you know, Saints games were on Saturday or Sunday, and LSU Tiger games were on Saturday. Those are times when typically you're not doing business with your family, and you're hanging out and with your friends. Hornets games are during the week, and most franchises around the country, they do have more hospitality, people entertaining clients and doing things through the week. Not to say that doesn't happen here, but the mindset is more a matter of, I want to personally go to the game, as opposed to, how can I use these tickets to my organization of 100 people to help grow and build the business. That's just the training that we have committed to doing one-on-one. We have our account reps work with our season ticket holders on that very matter and how to use their tickets, how to forward them through email, how to judge ROI and on hospitality and those types of things. And ultimately, that's how we're changing the mindset, both in our partnership and our hospitality tickets, is by showing the ROI behind the use of tickets in the partnerships. We measure everything. We track everything. Every chance we get in terms of our partnerships and what their business growth is and what they're trying to accomplish, we measure it through third-party, like RepuCom and others, that third parties that measure the amount of benefit that businesses are getting by their sponsorships and other things. And through that, it becomes more than just I'm a fan and therefore I like to have my sign up at the arena. It becomes more of I do that for a very good business reason. And the more we can do that over time, I think that you'll start to see that businesses will invest, even if they aren't fans. And we're starting to see that now, where people are saying, you know, this is a very value-oriented investment I can make in seats, because I know that I can touch X number of customers and, you know, and do all these things through the course of a season. And it kind of turns what is perceived to be now a negative, there's too many games, into a positive, because you have more opportunities to touch more clients, to engage more partners, and do more things. So it's going to take time, but I will tell you, it is a cultural kind of perspective that we're slowly overcoming. We have a business-to-business network that we do now. We do host hospitality and mixers for businesses to come together. And to answer your final question, yes, we do business with people who do business with us. So we do local, we do business with local companies every opportunity we can get. And again, if we have season ticket holders, whatever, that provide a service that we're using, we that's the tiebreaker. We use them over others. So that's part of how we believe we feed into the local economy and hopefully keep everything moving.
So one of the things you keep talking about is like changing culture. And this is just one of the things that our readers are just always dwelling on. What is the nature of the ownership currently that the Hornets have, with the NBA, you know, owning the team itself? You've been with the Hornets both when there has been, you know, the traditional owner with George Shen, and now you have a league office owner. So I was just wondering, what is the difference for you working there with the NBA office? Are they like a distant group that you guys really don't talk to that often? Because you can't just walk down the office and talk with David Stern. At least I would assume not.
We have telephones. No, but I don't mean to be. But no, it's the nature of my job specifically to make sure that the owner, whomever it is having their objectives met. And every single person owner is different. And although we had, you know, George Shen was the primary owner, Gary Schwest had input, you know, part of my role as president is to make sure that, you know, people buy these assets for, you know, for the investment, obviously, but they buy them because they want to partake and enjoy them as well. So part of that is understanding what it is that the owner wants. And in the case of the NBA, what the case is currently, we talk a lot. They're engaged, they're involved, they're helpful, but they also are, you know, allowing us to do the work we need to do. And they're because, you know, they have a lot of business going on as well, you know, and so taking on the task of micromanaging a operation is not anything they signed up for. But they are very engaged in ways that they can help and figure out. And so like anything else, they give us a budget and give us parameters and give us, you know, when we sit down and talk about strategically what we're trying to get done and how we're trying to get to do it, they understand and we move forward. And it's not much different than it would be for any other operation. The benefit that we have, obviously, is that they have a lot of expertise across a lot of the different teams and can help problem solve with some things. The challenge that we've had is that they're kind of a faceless entity other than David, right, who's busy working on a lot of different things. And I think that's part of what I hear our fans talk about is they want to have a face with the franchise. They want to have somebody who is a personality who can step in and the franchise can reflect. And I think that's what people have been hungry for, and that's what we hope to get them here in short order.
So, I mean, the personality, of course, right now is David Stern, who he can be very fun and very abrasive both at the same time. I got to ask this question. So the trade that didn't go down with the Lakers for Chris Paul this offseason, there have been the previous year when David Stern had his press conference about the NBA ownership. He said that in general they were going to accept Dell Demps's offer, you know, whatever kind of trades he came up with, that in general they were going to try to stay out of that. So mm-hmm. When the team contacted the league office and said, this is the trade we want to do with the Lakers, was there an expectation that it was going to be accepted? Or was there really like an expectation that, you know, well, we have to convince David Stern to do this before it can go through?
Well, it's funny. It's not, whenever you're working on trades, it's never a one last phone call to the owner and we'll try. There is constant communication going on what, and again, there's multiple deals going on. So there's not just that particular proposed transaction with the three team trade. there were maybe other deals that were going on at the same time, and there's this continual communication that happens with an owner. All along the way, they're kind of giving guidance about, well, let's try to do this, or let's try to stay away from this or that. And along the way, especially when you have multi-team deals, there are other owners as well, and there are others that, you know, they have different perspectives of things they want to get or don't want to get, and, you know, if I can get this, can you get that, and all these things are happening. So because of that, a great deal of trades never happen. They're proposed, they're talked about, they're discussed. You could spend 4 days on it. You can literally, you know, work your fingers to the bone and nothing comes of it. So, you know, there was never a moment where we sent, you know, the letter off to the main office and, you know, hoped and prayed it would get approved. That's not what happened. There happened to be a few issues that weren't quite ironed out and some things, and we just, it was, no. So there wasn't this moment where everyone kind of took an exhale and said, darn, that wasn't the point. You keep working and working and working. And I think what made that situation different is, you know, the obvious. It was Chris Paul. He's one of the best players in the league. And it was an owner. And there was a initial miscommunication about what had actually happened. I think there was some confusion that people thought the league stepped in and stopped it. None of those things were true. And so all of that made for a story that caught fire very fast and, you know, caught the airwaves for, you know, and caught people's imagination. And I think, unfortunately, when you're dealing with a league acting as an owner, you get people really thinking about, I mean, being creative about what possibly could be going on behind the scenes, when in fact it's just a simple decision process.
So I have a suggestion. I just finished watching the movie Moneyball. So I think you should just hire Brad Pitt, because all he has to do is pick up the phone and say, this is the guy I want, and the other guy says, okay.
You know, it's right. And, you know, it's funny. People put a lot of stock. And of course, today in the NBA, there's a lot more data used. We have measuring tools that would, you know, make your head spin. But, you know, baseball is naturally an individual sport. And basketball is a sport in which we see that players have a significant impact on other players while they play together. And so the science of Billy Ball, or Money Ball, whatever you want to call it, is great, but I'm not sure basketball will ever get to that point. There still will be an assessment of talent and understanding players' roles and how they fit into the bigger piece.
So I think we can probably close on a fun question. One of the things about the about
they were the, all fun so far. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. This one might actually be fun. But one of the things that inflamed the trade questionnaire was the social media, right? The stuff getting out that didn't used to get out, right? 5 years ago, these imminent deals didn't get sniffed over here and then reported all over the country in a matter of 10 seconds, right? So you are pretty much tearing it up on Twitter, right? And I don't know if that was part of I'm In, or you had too many floor tickets, so you just started giving stuff away, or, you know, is it like you're trying to clean out the closet, you know, and then now you're on a podcast, the Hornets 24/7. This is after the blogger basement midnight thing, right, that went on during the Chris Paul thing. What made you embrace all of these new media things, and how are you guys using it? And then, does Harold ever try to change your passwords to keep you from saying too much?
No. Actually, you know, I'm very, very unencumbered by Harold. He must have trust in me. But it's interesting, you know, we did some PR work, some training a couple of years ago, and the person that was doing the training does a lot of sports figures and whatever. At the end of it, the end of the one-day session, we said, so what's the next big thing? What's the big thing? And she said, this thing called Twitter. Well, explain it to me. Well, and I sat there and I scratched my head and I said, why on earth would anybody want to follow somebody to find out that they were going to the grocery store? It makes no sense to me. So I was actually, you know, kind of reticent of the whole thing. But about 4 months ago, I it wasn't the trade, it wasn't, you know, the social media and all this shit. It was more a matter that, that those resources and tools, podcasts, blogging, tweeting, fit our ethic. And our ethic is we want to be accessible and open to our fans. We want them to be engaged. We want them to participate. I, at every speech I give out my office line. I give out my email address. I want people to be able to feel like this is their team and I work for them. And I, if they have a question or answer, and I, and you'll be surprised, I get a lot of people calling me about trades and what didn't happen and what's going on. And I return all the phone calls. And people think you're crazy, but no, this is what the Hornets stand for. This is, we are different and we have to be different because we want to do some special things here. And so I see Twitter more as a way to engage fans. And yeah, the contests are fun and it's a way for maybe people to be able to come to games that don't normally have tickets. But these are, by and large, our most passionate believers in our brand. They're the most passionate people who understand what we're going through. And I have found that when you get someone who's passionately, unsatisfied or unhappy with what's going on, and you give them the facts and what you're thinking and what's going on, it's okay. There's something that in our business we talk about is that I'm okay if you love what we're doing and I'm okay if you hate what we're doing, but I'm really not okay if you don't have, if you're just ambivalent. Because if you're ambivalent, I can't change your ambivalence. And so what I've tried to do is try to make sure that people feel like they're engaged and can be part of this team and be part of the process of the decisions we make. And we have, I'm telling you, I get some ideas on Twitter and we've done them. We've done them, right? In 4 months, we've gotten some great ideas and we've turned around and done them. And to me, that's the power of social media. That's what I think I want to, more than anything, make sure that people feel that this is their team.
Can you give us an example or two? I mean, I know that you guys look at the blogs and stuff, but I mean, what has made it into production?
Well, there's a few things we're still working on. Somebody, you're putting me on the spot, but there's been at least three or four little things I can tell you right off the bat. When someone tweeted them to me, we turned around and did them. Actually, I tweeted out what should my contest be, and most of the contests that I'm using right now are ideas from our fans. They're not mine, so it's just little things. Yeah, and there's some bigger things that I'm working on, but our fans have the best ideas because you know why they unfortunately or fortunately, when you work in this business and you go to games and one of the things that really try to impress upon our staff is to have empathy for our fans, understand what it is to walk a mile in their shoes, and when you work in this business and you maybe park in the employee parking lot. And you walk in the back door and you eat an employee meal and then you go sit in your employee seat and you don't know what it's like to park six blocks away or to spend $10 on parking or to buy an $8 hot dog and to pay for your, so it's the best ideas and we force our, we had people, we did an exercise 2 years ago where I literally took people, we took our entire staff over the arena. We had people who worked for the team for 7 years had never been in the balcony before. It was crazy to me, right? Wow. So that's how we have to see our experience, the experience of our team to our fans' eyes. So when someone calls me and they're totally upset and angry, I get it. I totally understand. I understand their passion. And I can't always answer their question, you know, in a way that they're happy with. But I think most people appreciate the fact that you're willing to listen and you want to try. And I think social media, just to put a cap on it, is what you guys do, what you're doing. You know, we can't thank you enough. I think that's why we try to be accessible to you, try to be open with you, because you guys are doing nothing but promoting our brand. And we want to be held accountable to the things we're not doing as well as we should. So we're okay with it.
So you guys should make Eric Gordon healthy.
I'm working on it. Maybe we should, you know, get some sort of, I don't know, is there any Mystic Killers here in New Orleans? I'm sure there are, but we'll
right
there.
And while you're at it, trade for Dwight Howard and bring Chris Paul back. These are all good suggestions, right?
They are great ideas. I'm working on, yes. Not the first ones I've heard either. So,
we greatly appreciate you making yourself available to us, and I'm sure we'll be following up with more in the future.
Look forward to it, guys. Thank you for what you're doing.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Sure. Bye-bye.
So I hope everybody listening enjoyed that interview, and hopefully we'll have more coming up shortly as we gain access to more and more members of the Hornet staff. Thanks, Jason.
All right. Cool. Let's have a long time really each and every day. New Orleans is a party town. Ain't nothing but a party.